Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Today, we're going to lead off with why all those fruits and vegetables are so important. In fact, the newest study shows 7 daily portions of fruits and vegetables lower every risk factor for death by 40%. And then walking boosts creative thinking. And capsaicin, the very hot pepper, can help you with weight management. And 12 fruits and vegetables you don't want to eat unless they're organic. Plus a lot more on health and healing. Then we're going to look at commentaries. Lots of commentaries. Ralph Nader casting sunlight on secret government and its contractors. Then from Michelle Chen, when the government outsources to private companies, inequality gets worse. And then, why are Americans paying to be searched, spied on, shot at, and robbed blind by the government? John Whitehead. And then the drug that can make you kill, Martha Rosenberg. Those are some of the important commentaries dealing with issues that we all should be interested in. My guest in the second part of our program will speak on something that is rarely discussed but is so important. And from Florence, Italy, will be Professor Ugo Brody. He's a professor of physical chemistry at the University of Florence. We'll be going to him to talk about peak minerals and plundering the planet for mineral wealth. You've heard us do a program on Progressive Commentary on peak water, then peak soil, then peak oil, and then peak food. Now, peak minerals. You'll see why this is so important. Let's begin. Every year we come up with lists of fruits and vegetables that we really should be eating that are organic. These would be like our dirty dozen. According to the Environmental Working Group, the average American doesn't pay attention what goes on their food, and they should, because here are the foods that are most heavily sprayed with pesticides. In order: apples, strawberries, grapes, celery, peaches, spinach, sweet bell peppers, nectarines, cucumbers, cherry tomatoes, snap peas, and potatoes. Here are the clean ones. Now, mind you, let's say you cannot afford organic, but you want to be healthy. So if you have to buy something that's not organic, but is clean, and you can certainly spray it with a veggie wash, and then rinse it. Sweet potatoes, cauliflower, cantaloupe, grapefruit, eggplant, kiwi, papaya, mangoes, asparagus, onions, sweet peas, cabbage, pineapple, sweet corn, and avocado. There's also more and more studies showing that the amount of fruits and vegetables that have been recommended is too low. I have probably at least 100 studies in peer-reviewed literature showing you the long-term health benefits of eating more fruits and vegetables, a plant-based diet. This is the latest from Natural News, and this was published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health. It says, quote, 7 daily portions of fruits and vegetables lower all causes of death by 40%, the risk of death. Quote, nutrition scientists have been promoting the effects of a diet filled with fruits and vegetables in their natural form for the better part of 20 years, touting the plethora of protective flavonoids and fiber provided by these natural wonders. Most people would be impressed by the latest research showing that eating just 7 daily portions of fruits and vegetables is enough to slash the risk of all-cause death by more than 40% as compared to those eating one serving a day. And while this is an impressive figure, it would be interesting to determine the protective effect of eating 10 to 12 daily portions a day. A research team from the University College London reviewed the eating habits of 65,000 people and over a 13-year period, and they came up with these results. So what does this mean, and why is this important to us? I came across something just by accident once. I was befriending one of the great artists in American history. He was a Renaissance artist. He was a sculptor, painter. He did all forms of art, including stenciling. He wrote plays, books, a mime dance. Now, when I met him, he was 85. And I met him through his pianist, who he was still performing, by the way, in his Van Dyke studio. His name was Paul Swan. And what was of interest to me was that here you'd see him walking across. He'd been in Carnegie Hall for like 50 years. Couldn't afford it anymore, so he went a block away to Van Dyke Studios. And I would see him sometime when I go down, shuffling with his old worn fedora hat and his overcoat, which is probably 40 years old because he was somewhat substantially shriveled at that point. He'd be shuffling across the street with some, you know, sandwich that he had bought. And I would think to myself, isn't it interesting how when people get older in our society, that we don't even know who they are anymore, or we don't care. It's just another old man crossing a street. And so I asked him, I said, would you be willing to change your eating habits? And therefore the arthritis in your knees, you talk about the pain in your hands, that you can't work as long as you used to because you've got a severe stiffness. He said, well, he said, I've never really been into a healthy diet. The only advantage is I never smoked or drank or did drugs. He said, but I eat pretty much everything. And I said, well, for just a period of time, how about not doing it? All right. So I'd bring him some food, and he didn't eat it. He didn't like it. So I thought, all right, what can I do? So I said, what's your favorite flavor? And he said, well, I like chocolate. Good. So I would get some natural chocolate, and I would take broccoli sprouts and broccoli and cauliflower, cruciferous vegetables. I would also take a lot of different fruits. I would take a high-quality protein powder, and I would blend it all together with rice milk. But it would taste and look like a chocolate malt shake. And I would take him two of these. They'd be big, a quart each. And I would spike it with all kinds of vitamins and minerals. And I said, well, will you drink this? He said, let me try it. He said, I like this. I said, good. He said, there's nothing healthy in here, I hope. I said, well, I said, maybe a little bit of something, but if you like it and you're going to drink it, drink it. He said, well, this I can drink. So he'd drink one in the daytime and one in the evening because he stayed up real late doing his artwork. Within about 3 weeks, he said, that's strange. And I suppose that he said, last night I was able to stay up late and I was able to paint for about 6 hours. I didn't even get up. I said, and how long would you normally be able to sit and paint? And he said, maybe about a half hour before I'd be in too much pain. Put my hand in some ice. I said, well, that's good. And he got better and better and better. And that's when I realized that it wasn't just what we were consuming, it was the quantity. And that's where I came up with the concept I call the laws of compensation, which is, to the degree that you have any impairment, viral, bacterial, parasitic, injury, trauma, genetic, that has limited you, it's not good enough just to do okay. You have to exceed the level of the damage, the limitation. And it later worked on me by reversing male pattern baldness. If you're looking now, some of you watch every day over the internet, by going to ustream.tv and search for Gary Noll, you see I'm under 500 watts of light. I never wear makeup, not even for my television specials, which I do constantly. And so this is it. This is the natural skin, natural hair, thick. My hair's thick, thick, thick. And it grows tremendously. And otherwise, today I'd be as bald as my uncles, my brothers, my father. They were all bald. I was going bald. But I always had a glass of juice. I never smoked, never drank, never took drugs. Exercised every day. I've been a competitive athlete my whole life. It didn't change the genetics. It was only when I far and above exceeded by taking what would be equivalent to about 15 glasses of fresh organic juice a day, flooding my body with not only phytochemicals, but also the energy of the plant. In effect, the blood of the plant, when we eat it, we get in some, but most goes right out because it's locked in the non-digestible fibers, the lignocellulose. So that's why when you juice, your body is flooded instantly with high-level bioavailability of all the chlorophyll and healing nutrients and antioxidants. And the more you consume, the better off you are. So I started to see this first with Paul Swan. Then I did the same thing with Dr. Emmanuel Arbisi, who lived to be 102, by the way, and with others that I knew who were older. But all of them had the same problem. They didn't want to change. They just refused to. So I had to kind of work with them not wanting to change. So, and this will help everyone in the audience who has a finicky person you want to help. They don't want to help themselves. Find a taste that they like and then blend everything into that and have it consumed throughout the day. And that'll work. So it worked for reversing pattern baldness. So I tried it in a big experiment. It worked again. I tried it with menopause, rebalanced women's hormones, hundreds. So every time I've used it, it's worked. And even last night, I received a call from a gentleman who's 85 and who's very well known in his field, highly respected, and a kind man. And he said, I just want to call because I want to say goodbye and how much you meant in my life and that I learned so much from you, and I wouldn't be alive today had I not been following your protocols throughout the years. And I said, well, I appreciate the call, but I'm not willing to say goodbye to you. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, who says that you've got to go? He said, well, the doctors do. They only give me 2 to 3 days to live, and I just wanted to let everyone who's important to me know. I said, well, those are them. That's their reality. That's not your reality. Don't make their reality your reality. I said, are you aware that there is a part of your brain, and there's very specific hormones, that if you don't believe something's possible, your brain actually creates hormones that suppress your immune system? But also, if you believe something's possible, there are hormones your brain secretes that make it possible? There was a very famous psychotherapist, psychologist, Abraham Maslow, and he suffered through the Holocaust and was in a concentration camp, as were his family. And he noticed and talked about it later that those who survived believed that they could survive and believed they had something to live for. And that's why maintaining discipline in your life is so important. Getting up and making your bed, making sure that your clothes are hung up and or cleaned, and cleaning under the bed and on the windowsill, really, really caring for your environment as if that mattered, as if cleanliness and organization mattered, because it gives you one more thing to focus on that's positive about living. Because who can really function in complete chaos and disorder? No one. It's like walking in, someone says, well, I know where that paper is. Don't touch anything. But it's all clutter. It's just garbage. It's stuff. But I know where something is and you don't. Yeah, but it's your junk and your stuff, and you could still find something if you organized and cleaned up your space. But that's the kind of mind that has a cluttered mind. Remember, you can't have a cluttered, debris-strewn apartment or house with massive amounts of excess unless your temperament is that way, and now you're locked into that, this is the way I am, this is how I'm going to live. You've got to change that. You'd have to detox your mind, change your perception, and lo and behold, then it changes your biochemistry. In fact, as we speak right now, there is I've arranged to get a hyperbaric oxygen chamber and some other things sent to this person's home, and a whole protocol with a team that's going to go over and help, try to help this person. So my position is, don't call me to say goodbye, because I just don't accept goodbyes and that's it, that it's inevitable, fatalistic. No, there's always something we can do, and we should. So anyhow, so when it came to the idea that who says we should eat three servings or four servings or five servings of fruits and vegetables? They're never making it upon an optimistic, optimal model. They're making it based upon a pragmatic model that people are not going to eat their fruits and vegetables, not in a healthy form, not organic, not natural, because they don't like the taste. So we'll just say that the normal amount that we need to get our basic nutrients is 4 or 5. And I'm saying, what if we went to 20 or 30? And we ate some, we drank the juice of others, we took compounding powders. Then what do you think is going to happen when our body is suddenly flooded with healing nutrients? You know, it's like hugging a puppy or a kitten. You can't just pick him up for a little hug or a little snuggle. No, you know, you want to give 1,000 little kisses and hugs, just like the people you care about. So this is where more is better, not less. That's the takeaway message. From the Indiana School of Public Health, the risk of heart disease increases with iron consumption. And this was published in the Peer Review Journal of Nutrition. So where did we get most of our iron? Well, we get it from meat. And that is not good. Now, if you get most of your iron from green vegetables like kale or seaweeds, you're getting a different form. You're getting it in a form that's more easily absorbed and utilized. Get it from meat, you're getting way more than what your body needs, and in a form that is toxic. We should be walking. In fact, more Americans get their exercise every day by power walking than biking, tennis, football, basketball, any of the other sports. And a lot of malls open up in the morning early before the shops open up so people can go and power walk. It's safe and it's not impacted by the weather. This is from Stanford University, published in the Peer Review Journal of Experimental Psychology, Learning, Memory, and Cognition. They found this, quote, new research shows that walking boosts creative thinking. In a series of experiments, researchers from Stanford University in California compared levels of creativity in people while they walked, while they sat, and found creative output when up by an average of 60% while walking. I might mention that I go for long walks because I'm training all the time, and I'll go out for a 10-12 mile power walk, and I get some of my best thinking done versus sitting on a plane for 6 hours on a trip. It's not the same. And so let's get out and let's do more walking. Ideally, 1 hour, 6 days a week. And finally, mindfulness is helpful for people with ulcerative colitis. And here's what this says, done at the Rush University in Chicago, published in the journal Digestion. Quote, mindfulness-based stress reduction, that's like meditation, it's a type meditation, shows promise as a complementary approach to improving quality of life and decreasing perceived stress in people with ulcerative colitis. Good. Ulcerative colitis is a chronic inflammatory bowel disease that has no cure within orthodoxy, but we've certainly been able to see major improvements or complete cessation in all symptoms of people who've used complementary and holistic approaches. So, in this randomized controlled double-blind trial, those who went into remission and stayed there were using mindful meditation over an 8-week period. Mindfulness is simply when you can sit quietly in a space that you feel peace and just look around you and appreciate the environment you're in, your position in it. I think a wonderful thing is to go to a museum. Over on Fifth Avenue, around 70th Street, there is a museum, the Frick Museum. It's one of the smaller museums in New York. It was a person's home, and on the ground floor as you go in, there is a reflective fountain. It's a small fountain. It has a beautiful barrel glass roof, and it has surrounded by tropical plants, and you sit on these marble benches. Sitting on that bench, looking at the water, and then seeing the different effects of the light coming through the glass, it's just very peaceful. It's relaxing. Going over to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and going up to the at the far west end in the new wing, and you go up to the American Masters, especially the Hudson Valley Masters like Thomas Cole and Frederick Lewis Church. Huge canvases, and you just sit and just be absorbed in the mindfulness of contemplating the work. And you relax, your blood pressure comes down, you're at ease, you feel great. So that's what we should be doing more of. I'm Gary Knoll, and nice to have you with us today. Our environmental segment will be our guest on Peak Minerals and plundering the planet for mineral wealth. You can imagine how important minerals are. Every cell phone, your computer, cars, navigational systems. We use them in a lot of different ways, and we'll go to that person in a few minutes. I still have some commentaries before we get there. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. Just a few program announcements before we go to our commentaries from Ralph Nader. When the government outsources, which they do almost everything now, to private companies, inequality really is bad. And also very important, we all hear John Whitehead talk about why are Americans paying to be searched, spied on, shot at, and robbed blind by the government. But first, this Sunday at noon at 34th Street and 11th Avenue, across from the Jacob Javits Center, I'll be one of seven speakers, keynote speakers, that will be talking about the abuses in mental health and psychiatry. The American Psychiatric Association will be holding its annual meeting at the Javits Center. We'll be there to offer protest. For those of you who have never been to a protest, who haven't joined us at our many demonstrations to speak out for social justice on issues, it's a time to come. Because who doesn't feel that there's some outrage when the government and the psychiatric association and the pharmaceutical companies are benefiting from trying to make us feel that somehow our thoughts, our actions on our thoughts, even peaceful and protected by the First Amendment, now cast us as being mentally imbalanced. In effect, we're insane, and only a drug or restraint or hospitalization is of any value. And the court always sides with the perpetrators. not the citizens. So you're going to hear stories you have never heard before. So join me to protest against the abuses of mental illness, including the drugging of our children, including the false diagnosis of conditions that do not exist, like social anxiety disorder and authority defiance disorders. These are not real. Then how in the world did the entire psychiatric profession agree to make them real? What a fraud of a profession. I'll be asking psychiatrists to come up on the forum and to debate me. In fact, we've already will be sending out requests for debate between myself and any number of psychiatrists. That'll be interesting to see who takes us up on it, and then the debate begins. Noon on Sunday. This Friday, I'll be meeting up at an Upper West Side gourmet vegan restaurant and with a small group of listeners, and from there we're going to go to an art movie. And if you want to join, call Jeremy, and you pay for yourself. This is not a fundraiser. Before, we were packed. It was a monster hit for the station, but it was $600 a couple, and in any case, but they got a Broadway show and everything included in the meal. This time, we're not going to do a Broadway show this week. We're just doing a film and dinner. You pay for it yourself, but you have a good time, and we spend the evening together. There's generally going to be about 8 of us, maximum 10. Call Jeremy in my office at 646-926-5434. 646-926-5434. And I look forward to seeing you on Friday night. Our special of the day, and I haven't offered this in a long time, Supremacy Extra. Pineapple flavor. The big jar, this lasts for months. This is the one I take on the road when I travel. This is the formerly the Advanced Supremacy Buffered. Now, what's in this vitamin C that makes it so unique? Well, first, it's organic. Secondly, it's gluten-free. Third, it's vegan. Then you have potassium, cranberries, bilberries, bioflavonoids, acerola berries, amla fruit, and quercetin, selenium, magnesium, and calcium from ascorbates. So it is terrific for you. And you have 120 servings. That's almost 4 months' supply. That is a 4 month supply. And it's just the best of the best. So, and I'm limited. We have a limited number of these. Before we go back into manufacturing, I think we're already back, but it's going to take us another 4 or 5 weeks. So if you want to get what we have, and it's normally $85, it's only $51. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 for the Supremacy Extra. The organic and all-natural pineapple flavor, 4 months supply, only $51. Great savings, great ingredients. Okay, 877-627-5065. I'd like to welcome all of you who've just dialed across and you're listening now. This is from Ralph Nader in the Huffington Post. Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis once wrote, "Sunlight is said to be the best of disinfectants." Indeed, openness and transparency are essential for a healthy and functioning democracy. Unfortunately, despite lofty initial campaign promises by the Obama administration, widespread government secrecy has only worsened in recent years, and access to information by journalists and activists is disturbingly limited. Here are five areas where critical improvements is providing citizens access to information must be made. One, put the full text of government contracts online. When it comes to government spending and government contracts, the devil is in the details. Unfortunately, these details are often unavailable to the public. Free access to government contracts by taxpayers, the media, scholars, watchdog groups, and even other bidders would be an important step to publicize how our government does its business with taxpayer money. putting the text of these contracts online would encourage fiscal responsibility, propagate better and fairer practices in contracting, provide taxpayers better savings and value, encourage active citizenship, and hinder corruption. Each year, hundreds of billions of dollars in federal government grants and leaseholds and licenses are awarded to corporations. Access to the terms of these deals should be readily available for public inspection. The Digital Accountability and Transparency Act is a bill that aims to improve the quality of public accessible government information, set uniform standards, collect spending data, and examine the information to root out waste, fraud, and abuse. It was introduced in the House by Daryl Issa and Elijah Cummings last year and passed an overwhelming 380-1 vote. The bill, however, does not yet require the full text of government contracts to be put online. Senator Tom Corbin, Republican Oklahoma, and Representative Issa both told me they support giving citizens easy online access to the full text of government contracts, but actions speak louder than words. They should jointly offer an amendment to the act to make it easier for Americans to see where and how public officials are spending their tax dollars. Number two, easy online access to voting records of members of Congress. Consider the arduous length many citizens must currently go through to simply compile the timely voting records of their members of Congress. In an age where there's a simple app for nearly everything, the lack of easy, accessible voting records on the websites of each member of Congress is unacceptable. Number three, improve responses to the Freedom of Information Act request. When President Obama took office, he declared that his administration be, quote, the most transparent in history. Unfortunately, this turned out to be an overstatement. It was widely reported that last year, the Obama administration denied a record number of Freedom of Information Act requests. What is their most cited reason? National security concerns. According to the Associated Press, quote, the administration cited more legal exceptions it just justified withholding materials and refused a record number of times to turn over files quickly that might be especially newsworthy. And number four, public access to congressional research reports. Number five, preserve the people's printer. In the past few decades, the GPO has shifted, the General Government Printing Office has shifted much of the information it provides online. As a result, it has printed less and even outsourced more of its printing work. The documents are there that are printed are unreasonably expensive. So let's get back to making it the old-fashioned way. I agree. Good information from Ralph Nader. Now, this is from the perspective of those of us, myself included, who believe that our government has overextended its authority into our lives. If you believe that the government has the right to read every single citizen's every single email, listen in on every single phone call, look at every single photograph or image you've ever received or sent, and then collect everyone who's ever phoned you's information going back over a dozen years, explain your rationale why they should have this right. And then I'll explain how the government has no right to do this. And the fact that they make something the law doesn't mean it's the right law. Think of how many laws. It was legal to own slaves. It was legal to confiscate people's property, especially if they were African Americans or Native Americans. It was legal to keep women from voting. It didn't make it right. We have lots of laws we shouldn't have because we never look at who creates the laws, special interest groups. There was a time in our history when our forefathers said enough's enough and they stopped paying their taxes to what they considered an illegitimate government. They stood their ground and refused to support a system that was slowly choking out any attempts at self-governance and which refused to be held accountable for its crimes against people. Quote, to force a man to pay for the violation of his own liberty is indeed an addition of insult to injury. Benjamin Tucker, 19th century advocate for American individualistic thought. The State Department wants $400,000 to purchase a fiberglass sculpture of a camel looking at a needle for its new embassy in Pakistan. They've already spent their allocated $630,000 to increase the number of likes and fans on their Facebook and Twitter pages. The NATO ambassador for the United States needs $700,000 for landscaping and gardening. The National Science Foundation likes $700,000 to put a theatrical production about climate change. And the Senate staffers need $1.9 million for lifestyle coaching. You heard me live, right? Lifestyle coaching. Also, Yale University researchers would really like $384,000 so they can study the odd corkscrew shape of a duck's penis. I realize it's Yale, and that's probably very important for the old alumni there. But do we know how that would influence our lives? I promise this is no belated April Fool's joke. These are actual line items paid for by American taxpayers whose tax dollars continue to be wasted on extravagant, unnecessary items that serve no greater purpose than to fatten the wallets of corporations and feed political graft. Oh, such as the $1 million bus stop? Yes, one single bus stop. Why? They wanted to have some heated benches. And how many people would be able to sit there? 15. It wouldn't protect from the sun, rain, snow. No, but it would be a warm bench at $1 million. Case in point, despite the fact that we have 46 million Americans living below poverty, we have 18 million children living in households without adequate food, we have 900,000 veterans living on food stamps, we have 950,000 homeless vets, we have 150 million Americans living near, at, or below the poverty line. Enormous sums continue to be doled out for presidential vacations. $16 million for a trip to Africa, then to Hawaii. Overtime fraud at the Department of Homeland Security, $9 million in proper overtime claims. And that's just in six of the many Department of Homeland Security offices. In Hollywood movie production, $10 million was spent by the Army National Guard for Superman movie tie-ins. And then this doesn't even touch on the astronomical amount of money spent on dubious wars abroad. Consider this. Since 2001, Americans have spent $10,500,000. Again, this is $10,500,000 every hour, 24/7. For the numerous foreign military operations, including Iraq and Afghanistan. There's also an additional $2.2 million spent every hour on maintaining America's nuclear stockpile. There's $35,000 spent every hour to produce and maintain our collection of Tomahawk missiles. Then there's the money the government exports to other countries to support their arsenals. That's $1,600,000 an hour that we, the taxpayers, pay. But did you know any of this? Then there's U.S. Supreme Court's recent decision in McCutcheon versus FEC, which reinforces a government mindset in which the rights of the wealthy are affirmed by the courts, while the rights of the average working-class American are routinely dismissed as secondary to corporate and government concerns. Under the guise of protecting freedom of speech, a divided 5-4 court did away with established limits on the number of candidates an individual can support with campaign contributions. And so it goes. Yeah. When all is said and done, what we are witnessing is the emergence of a disconcerting government mindset that interprets the Constitution one way for corporations, government entities, and the wealthy, and uses a second measure altogether for average Americans. For example, contrast the Supreme Court's affirmation of free speech rights for corporations and wealthy donors, McCutcheon and Citizens United, with its tendency to deny those same rights to the average American when government interests abound. Unfortunately, this constitutional double standard is coming to bear on all aspects of our lives, not just the realm of campaign finance law. It allows lobbyists intimate access to our elected officials while prohibiting Americans from even standing silently in protest near a government building. It grants immunity to police officers who shoot unarmed civilians while harshly punishing Americans who attempt to defend themselves, mistaking a SWAT team raid for home invasion. And it gives government agents carte blanche access to America's communications and activities while allowing the government to operate in secret with secret hearings, secret budgets, secret agendas. This is a far cry from how a representative government is supposed to operate. Indeed, it has been a long time since we could claim to be the masters of our own lives. Rather, we are now the subjects of militarized, corporatized empire builders in which the vast majority of we the citizens work ourselves to the bone for the benefit of the privileged few. I'm Gary Noll. Let's go to our guest who is standing by over in Italy. He is in Florence, Italy. As I mentioned earlier in the program when I gave you his background, he is Professor Ugo Bardi, Professor of Physical Chemistry at the University of Florence, where he specializes in materials for new energy sources and resource depletion and climate change. He is also the president of the Italian chapter of the Association for the Study of Peak Oil and Gas, and he is a member of the International Scientific Committee. He's a regular contributor to the Oil Drum and Energy Bulletin. He is the author of The Limits of Growth Revisited. Nice to have you with us today.
Hello.
We usually hear about peak oil and peak water and peak soil, but now, and peak food. However, mineral resources are equally not an infinite source. We rarely hear about the rapid rate of the earth being plundered for those minerals and rare earth materials that are critical for sustaining our civilization's economy and our infrastructure's dependency upon high technology and electronics. Even the clean, renewable energy technologies that climate change environmentalists hope will replace fossil fuels rely heavily upon these minerals. However, when we speak of peak oil, we're referring to a single specific resource. On the other hand, there are many different minerals and earth metals, some more scarce and being depleted more rapidly than others. So I'd like you to begin by helping us understand the current state of the most critical minerals today that our society uses and that we believe is unlimited. Please take us on that journey.
All right, let's see what I can say about that. First of all, you mentioned peaking. Peaking is a natural phenomenon. It's the result of economic factors that make people extract first the resources which cost the least. It's normal, it's natural, it happens because you want to make a profit as fast as possible. So you start by extracting what you find more easily on the surface and then in a form which is concentrated, in a form which is easier to extract. Think of the gold rush in California. I mean, at that time, all the equipment that was needed for a miner was just a pan, and they would go panning in rivers, and with just a pan, they could find gold nuggets. It was very easy. It took no energy at all, almost. And now we are reduced to the condition in which we extract gold from rocks which contain so little gold that we cannot see it by the naked eye. So you see the big difference. There has been a big change. It's an evolution of the process of extraction, which is leading us to having to expand more and more energy to extract what we need. And we need a lot of resources for our modern industrial society that, as you said, needs all sort of rare and expensive minerals for instance, for the electronic systems. So once you get into this idea that it's a question of cost, what you can and you cannot extract and obtain for what you need, then you see that that you have big, big problems because these resources that we need are spread over many countries, many political situations, many economic situations, and there is always the temptation for those who have resources in their territory to use them as weapons, political or otherwise. So far, it must be said that there has not been so much happening in this sense. The economic system is resilient in the sense that when some resource gets scarce, then the system makes it cost more. And at that point, the people who are trying to keep it for themselves are so tempted to put it back on the market that they usually do it. So far, we have seen very little in terms of strategic resource problems. There was a few years ago the rare earth problem that you may have heard about, which means that China has most of the world resources in terms of rare earths, and rare earths are fundamental for electronics. They're not so rare, actually. The name is a bit of a misnomer, but they are not common either. So we get our supply from China. And China at some point had made some rumors that they would keep these resources from themselves. But as a result, the prices of these resources went up tremendously, of a factor 20 or so, which means that at this moment, China released these resources again on the market. So there was no big crisis except for those people who had wanted to bet on the prices going up more, and then they were surprised by the crash of prices that followed. So you see, it's a complicated matter. The problem is that rare resources are very difficult to recycle. So the problem exists in the sense that we can keep mining, we can keep going, we can still supply the world for some time. I think we don't have right now critical troubles ahead, but the problem is there. Problem is there because these resources, as you said, are finite. There is a limited amount of materials that we can extract, in the sense that we can extract them at a reasonable price. Because if you cannot afford it, you can as well say that it is not there. You cannot access it. And this is a problem for rare minerals more than for common minerals like iron, aluminum. They are not such a big problem as long as we have energy. But I'll make you an example here. It's the example of platinum. You know, platinum is a very fundamental material. It's not just a precious metal. It's fundamental for automotive catalytic converters. If you don't have platinum, you will spew out a lot of pollution. So all cars today, all cars which are burning gasoline in the engine, are using platinum, or exactly platinum group metals, because they contain also palladium and rhodium, in their catalytic converter. And this is a big problem, because these converters are using up about half of the world production of platinum. And platinum is a very rare metal, extremely rare. You know, the story of platinum is an element which likes to stay with iron. When it finds iron, it alloys with iron. But it's much less common than iron. So as a result, in very remote ages, long, long ago, it went down into the core of the earth with iron. So most of the platinum we have today, there was in origin on the earth, is now at the center of the earth, where it is a little bit difficult for us to go and get it. So what we are left with is very, very little. So the problem is there, not because we don't have any more platinum, but because the cost of a catalytic converter could become as high as that of the whole car. And that's a problem. So either you are willing to accept a level of pollution which we do not accept anymore, or you had to find some way to run your car without platinum, or to pay a lot of money for this platinum. And you see, this is just one example. There are many, but I think I'll stop here and we keep going. But I probably gave you some idea of what the problem is.
Yes, I appreciate these insights. Thank you. A big issue that is rarely discussed is the fact that other countries, specifically China and India, have run short of minerals in their own countries because their enormous populations and their industrial growth over the last 20 years. So they've gone around the world leasing or buying major mineral resources. In fact, it's estimated that China controls the highest amount of minerals in the world. We don't know the exact amount because it's not well known, but I've heard people in the business say they could have 70% or more of the world's minerals. The United States, on the other hand, we have abundant amount of coal, we do have oil, and we do have natural gas. We don't use geothermal at all, even though that is 30,000 times more effective, and it's unlimited. We have thousands upon thousands of geothermal hot springs. We don't use them. And we don't use wave power, even though we could. So we've kind of taken this almost a hubristic attitude that we're okay, and in time, when these resources start to go down and become more costly, it's 50 years from now. It's 100 years from now. So our battle is really one of keeping the public confused about, is global warming from humans? Is it that serious? And instead of looking at which minerals do we require, where we're going to get those minerals, at the very time that we should be working in cooperation with other countries to lessen our dependence on what we extract from our soil and exploit our environment, we're at war, in effect, an ideological war with both Russia and China, and India is, for all intents and purposes, in a mess right now, as is Brazil. They had their boom, and now they're in bust times. So could you look at the rest of the world, its minerals, its need for minerals, especially in high technologies and in low technologies, and how we had better pay attention to where we're going to get our minerals in the future?
Absolutely. You mentioned several fundamental points on this issue, because it is true that the West in general, the United States and Europe, have been very active in using up the minerals they had in their territories. And so we now are in a situation in which we don't have so much to extract anymore, unless we are willing to use extremely expensive methods. We are really scratching the bottom of the barrel. Like when you say about shale oil, shale gas, tar sands, all these sources of energy, which are very much exalted, if you allow me the term, they are said to be a revolution, a technological revolution, and they are a revolution in the sense that by using these minerals, we can somehow keep constant, avoid a decline of production, but we cannot do more than that. They're not a renaissance. They're just a way to plug the hole for a while. So there is this problem, and there is the big, big strategic or political or geopolitical, if you like, problem of how to manage the remaining resources at the global level. Who is going to have them? Who is going to use them? Who is going to manage them? Now, the first problem we have is that the nations, the countries which have mineral resources, given the situation in which we have so expensive mineral commodities, the market now is set for very high prices. Oil costs now 5 times more than it used to cost 10 years ago. It's a very big change, and that means that the nations which produce oil are making a lot of money. And one problem is that their economy is booming, the population is growing, and they consume more. And that's a big problem, not just for us, who are consumers, but for them also, because their economy is based on the exports of oil, for instance. Just citing the case of oil, because this observation is valid for many cases. As you said, you mentioned China has gigantic resources in terms of mineral, for instance, of coal, but China does not export coal. It uses it all for domestic consumption, but it does export rare earths, as we said before. So you see, it is a very complex situation in which we risk to go to a situation of conflict, and which I think is what's happening now in the case of the war, so far only in terms of wars between Russia and the US and Europe. because there is this geopolitical problem and everything, but eventually the big problem, the big issue underlying all this is a question of mineral supply, because Europe is supplied with natural gas from Russia. Russia is now finding an agreement to supply China with natural gas, because China needs more natural gas to supply its economy. So it's a game, it's a political game in which you try to gain the advantage on your competitors, trying to decide where the limited mineral resources will go. And I think a lot about the recent crisis in Ukraine can be read in these terms. That is, we are managing positioning in such a way to try to affect the supply of energy from Russia to the rest of the world, because Russia still has sizable resources. And you might have heard said by various politicians that America could replace Russia in supplying, for instance, natural gas to Europe. And this is a little bit optimistic, in my opinion. If you hear a politician speak, okay, that looks easy. But you know that politicians speaking is not exactly so reliable normally. So the problem with America replacing Russia in supplying gas to Europe, there are a few small problems. First of all, it would take at least 10 years. It would require gigantic investments to create the facilities to liquefy gas, transport it across the ocean and bring it to Europe. And anyway, it will not work, because after 10 years, supposing that somebody is willing to spend all this money, the shale gas wells in the United States will be declining in terms of production, so there won't be anything to export from America to Europe. But still, you see how the political game is played and how much exists inside underlying these conflicts that so far, thankfully, remain only in terms of financial tricks.
Yeah, but there are consequences. We're out of time, Professor Ugo Bardi, Bardi from Florence, Italy. You've given us some very important thinking points, and we appreciate it. Again, we now understand there is a peak minerals, that these minerals are not equally divided amongst all countries, and that China now is the dominant player. Brazil is also high up there.
Absolutely.
And that the United States had best pay attention to its technologies. And as you said, if they think they're going to get away with putting in our cheap gas hydrofracking, we better understand that most of those gas hydrofracking wells are already 50% gone after 1 year. This was mainly a gimmick for creating artificial bubbles for the speculators to get in early and get out. And others coming in later think it was going to be bonanza. Boy, do they not know that. And there's also this assumption. Why should we assume over the next 12 years or 10 years that there's not going to be any cataclysmic weather event, a solar storm, a major earthquake, a major, you know, high category storm that would wipe out major areas of a city? We're making an awful lot of assumptions, and that is foolish. But anyhow, I appreciate very much your input.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And his website is called Cassandra's Legacy, after the famous Homerian soothsayer, and can be found at cassandralegacy.blogspot.com. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you for listening. Go over and say hello to, we're out of time. I would normally go to Luann Panessi, but let's go directly to Utrecht Lead. Hi, Utrecht. Then we'll go directly to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, you've got listeners in Turkey. I have an email here from John, who's a PhD, and he's from Zerve University in Turkey, and he says, I write in response to the April 24th show a man called and suggested that an article in some magazine argued that an older version of a pertussis vaccine was effective. He says, I agree with the line of critique that Dr. Null offered. He says, there's an Australian video called Vaccination, the Hidden Truth, and it says that it might be beneficial to be sick. Perhaps children should have the measles. He says, my child has never been vaccinated. She did have German measles at 21 months and chickenpox at age 3 and 8 months. But that was before I knew to give her high daily doses of vitamin C, D, B, E, and Himalayan salt. Since that time, she doesn't even get a cold. And he says, by the way, I completed a quantitative article showing that at the national level across the world, infant vaccines do nothing to reduce national infant mortality rates. I tried to submit it to a journal and was rejected by it. So I thought that was very... I had measles.
Look,
had chickenpox.
We all had... Our whole generation had measles, chickenpox, mumps. We survived, and now we have natural immunity for life. There's no vaccine known to give you natural immunity for life, and it frequently causes more harm than it could possibly do, and there's no good science behind it. Send that. Ask him to send his article to us, and we'll take a look at about posting it on our enormous scientific article that we post every day on blogs.garynull.com. Thank you, Luann. Let's say hello to Utrice. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today, Detroit's emergency manager seeks support from state legislators. The tiny nation of the Marshall Islands charges the Nuclear Nine with treaty violations. And I'm talking about how the players got played in the NBA's decision on Donald Sterling.
All right. But there is one aspect of Sterling. And I think that we miss this, and maybe you might want to discuss this at some point. First, why is it that this man has had a long-time history of racism, and that should have immediately brought his overall capacity for making inappropriate decisions and choices to the fore? It wasn't. Why is it we don't look at the character of people in positions of power? For example, if we're going to look at Sterling, why don't we look at all of the different team owners? How did they make their money? Is it any better for an owner to own the largest dress factories in Bangladesh, where the women are made making 14 cents an hour? They have the shortest lifespan of any group of workers in the world, 33, I think it is. And yet they made their money, and because they made it legally, we're now considered that it is ethical what they do with it. I believe that it's time that we examine the entire group of people owning any professional franchise and what that the standards that we, the public, should be demanding of people who have that much power in a sport. Over to you, Utrice Lee.
I gotta get to Detroit.
Okay. Why don't they send Mr. Sterling to live in Detroit?
No, it's got enough problems as
he
it is.
He would pollute it. All right. Back in a moment with you, Utrice Lee.